Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Kasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Kasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Kasim, and our guest today is Chris Pruitt. So, Chris, you're going to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
Yeah, well, my name is Chris Pruitt. I work for a large television broadcasting company, in fact, one of the largest in the United States. I'm a vice president. I run a TV station in Houston, Texas. That's what I do professionally. Of course, I'm here on my own accord today. Through the invitation of you guys. Thank you very much, by the way. And I live in Houston, Texas. I lived in all over Texas all of my life. For about 5 years, I lived up in Idaho, and that was a really experience. And I guess that living up there is really what sort of got me kicked off and going down a different trail, I guess you would say. But thank you guys for having me here today. I really appreciate it.
That's awesome. Cool.
Yeah. Thank you so much. So in terms of, you know, how you started your journey in your career, so we can talk a little bit more about that. So, you know, what made you want to go into television?
Well, it was kind of interesting. I got out of college. I went to work for a company, kind of the a really cool job working in the power sports industry for a company out of Dallas, out of Irving, actually. We were a distributor of motorcycle, jet ski, snowmobile parts and accessories. Basically, every motorcycle store in the United States bought all their helmets and shirts and stuff like that from us. And so I wanted to get into sales. And, at that time, Al Gore had just invented the internet. So it was brand new. And I went online and I said, where can I combine my marketing background, which is what I had there, and get into sales? Because I started listening to a bunch of Zig Ziglar cassette tapes and Brian Tracy and all these sales trainers. And I said, I want to become a salesperson. And so I started looking at how you can combine the two. And I went to this TV station in Wichita Falls, Texas, and said I'd like a job, and they gave it to me. And I've been with that company my whole entire career, except for about 5 years, where I went up to Idaho to work with a friend who was having some issues with a TV station up there. And it's been an amazing journey. And in fact, just a couple of days ago, I was having a conversation with my girlfriend, Jamie, and I said, I wonder what would have happened had I not went down that road, you know, had I not walked in that door and, you know, had the courage to go in there and ask these people to hire this guy who has no sales experience, just a bunch of marketing background. And anyway, here I am, you know, all these years later. And that little bitty company grew from a couple of little bitty TV stations to now over 200. And I'm part of something much bigger.
So at that time, you just drove to Wichita Falls from Irving, and you knocked on their door and asked them to hire you?
Well, we had made a decision. I took a big step. I kind of quit a job before I had another job. And my wife, she had we'd made the decision she was going to be a stay-at-home mom, and we had a six-month-old baby. So needless to say, I was highly motivated to get to work. But we knew we wanted to move back. We were both from Wichita Falls, and I knew we wanted to move back there. And that's what we did. And so just took the big step and got out there and got after it and made it happen.
So how has working in the TV business changed from that time until now?
It's just like it's like any business that you're in nowadays. You know, it's constantly evolving. It's constantly changing. It's just keeping up with technology, keeping up with the disruption that happens within your industry. And as I look at it, it's just all about how you can accommodate and how you can handle change and how you can handle adversity. And that's really I think about it now. Had I not made some changes in my life back in, 2011, 2012, and had some things happened that made me a bit more self-reliant and resilient and whatnot, I don't know that I could have kept up. I don't know that things would have, turned out the way they have.
So can you talk a little bit more about those changes that you made in your life that really, made that pivot and really helped you out in your life and your career?
Yeah. So in 2011, my daughter, she was 11 years old at the time. She was diagnosed with lymphoma and with cancer. And, long story short on that is it took 30 months of daily chemo to get her well. And in fact, she's 22 right now. And just a few weeks ago, we moved her to Champaign, Illinois. She's starting out her career, sales career, by the way, with Caterpillar. And she graduated from Texas State University. And we took her and her boyfriend on a trip to Mexico. We came back. She had a couple of days to get things together. And then she went directly to Champaign. Her last couple of years, she worked for Caterpillar. She started out as an intern for a couple of weeks, and then they just hired her on. And so she works for them. But she was diagnosed with lymphoma. And I would like to say that, there's a silver lining somewhere in there, but it's just the hardest thing I've ever been through in my life. And so at that time, things were very, very different. We were living in Idaho. We'd been up there for a year at that point. It just so happened we were in the right place at the right time because she got into not only if your kid gets lymphoma or leukemia, St. Jude is the best place. But luckily that in Boise, just 90 minutes away, they had a study open and had an opening in that study for her particular cancer. She was being treated there. So that worked out very well. And whenever she got cancer, at that time, total workaholic. The only thing I did outside of work is maybe play golf a little bit. And I weighed, I was about as my friend would say, about a butterfinger shy of 360 pounds at that point. And I've been big all my life. And so I knew something had to change the health and chewed a lot of Red Man chewing tobacco. And I instantaneously quit that. I'm like, if she got cancer from dumb luck and here I am doing this stuff that I'm paying to put in my mouth, what the hell's going on here? Something's got to change. And so I started making some change and started paying attention to my health. It started with a couple of, as most people in that case, you take a few walks around the block, I could maybe go, a block or two and my legs would hurt so bad that in my feet, but it's one of those things where you just keep going and you just keep going. And then What really solidified me on the journey, I guess you could say, is the next year, my buddy and my boss, who I moved up to Idaho to work with his TV station up there, he very unexpectedly passed away of a heart attack. And not only did he pass away, he died on my birthday. And that I felt like that was sending me a message, like a real wake up call. And then I put it into high gear. And there was just a lot going on. I mean, with my kid having cancer, my buddy dying, a lot of changes in the business. It was tough. I mean, it was tough, but I said, I need to do this now more than ever. And I just started, your health is your wealth. And I just started going down that road first. And then I said, once I got into a state that I could really, begin to, a little bit more mobile and whatnot, I said, I'm going to start doing some of the things that I wished I would have always done. And I'm going to try to be the person I always wanted to be. And really that journey started out. It was January 1st, 2013. And I'd made a commitment to myself that I was going to go to Boise. They were having one of those polar plunges where you jump into some cold water. Well, the night before, it had come a massive snowstorm. I was 90 minutes from Boise. The roads were covered in snow. It was 5 degrees outside. I mean, I had every reason in the world to not get up at 5 in the morning, drive to Boise, and jump into the water. And I said, I'm not going to start this year off like that. I'm going to do something different and I'm going to go. And I went and I did it. And it was a total experience. It was crazy. I discovered whenever you jump in really cold water, you have an involuntary reflex that takes your breath away. I thought the little frog, they had to break the ice in this mountain lake so we could get into it. I thought the frogmen that were in the water there, the scuba divers, they were there just for theatrics. I thought I was going to need one of them to fish me out of the water. But it was an experience. And from then I said, you know, I'm going to start keeping a list of things I want to do, things I've always wanted to do, and I'm going to start doing them. And that's what I've done. And then that turned into just trying to push myself out of my comfort zone. And, you know, like I said, become a person I always wanted to be.
That's interesting and eye opener as well. So in all these difficulties, after all these problems, after all these difficulties, what gave you the courage to get a fresh start? Like, how you cope up with all these things? It's difficult.
I think I get a lot of motivation, I think, from regret. There was a doctor in Waco, Texas, not a, like, have a heart attack doctor, a PhD type doctor. Mm-hmm. And he had the best definition for regret, and that is, you do what you thought you needed to do at the time because you thought you needed to do that in order to survive. And I had a lot of regrets in my life. I mean, some of them started back. I mean, my earliest regret that I remember was in a YWCA pool, you know, to get my swimming certificate at 9 years old, I had to jump off of a high dive and I wouldn't jump and I didn't get a certificate. And I always, you know, felt like I, you know, let somebody down by not doing that. And it's always stuck with me. And so I think regret drives a lot of it, but it's also about, I want to set a good example for my kids. In fact, I think the way you all found me is I've started sharing some of the stories. I've written hundreds, I've probably written thousands of stories about the past 10 years and all the adventures and everything else. And in the beginning, I started to share some of them, but then I stopped because it felt like it felt weird. It kind of felt like, you know, like you were bragging or something, but it was just or like I felt like somebody may think that I'm preaching at them or trying to tell them how to live their life or something. And I'm just writing a story that I want someday my kids to read. And I want to set a good example for my kids. And that's really why I do what I do, you know, is to also get my kids to the point when, like I said, when my daughter came back from this wonderful trip that we took her on to Mexico to celebrate her graduation, when she got back, she had a shirt waiting that said, expect to self-rescue, no help is coming. And that's kind of the way I want my kids to feel. I want them to be self-reliant. And, you know, my daughter, like I said, you know, cancer survivor, graduated from college, now has her job. I have a son in Idaho still who, and my kids are also different. He has hair down to way past probably to his butt. And he has all these death metal bands and stuff that he's plays in. I could never have the courage. He's an awesome guitar player and a drum player. And then my other son, you know, he was a Marine and he got out a couple of years ago and he's here in 2 weeks, he's starting to EMT school so he can become a fireman. And, you know, I just hope that some of this is rubbed off on them and just given them the opportunity and the courage to, you know, get rid of some of these self-limiting beliefs that we have. You know, it's, for years and years and years, everybody in my company used to make fun of me because I wouldn't get on an airplane. If it was within 10 hours, I'm driving. So if I had a, you know, meeting in the morning at 8 and I was in Midland, Texas, I knew it would take me, you know, 6 hours to get there. So I'd just leave it 2 in the morning and I would go to the meeting and they'd all make fun of me. Well, I finally, you know, I wanted to go more places in the world and I wanted to get over this fear of flying. So I hired a flight attendant or a flight instructor to help me get over the fear of flying, and it was absolutely terrifying. And we got to the point where I was over the fear of flying, and I'm like, well, hell, I'm already this far. We might as well just keep going, you know? And I soloed an airplane, and the video of me, because, you know, we keep a GoPro in the cockpit, because you come back and you look at it and you can see what you did and everything. So it was sort of a sneak attack to solo. They don't really tell you. It's just they decide when you're ready, and then you have to go make 3 takeoffs and landing. And looking at that video of me solo, and it's, if you want to see pure sheer terror and panic, you should look at it. In fact, my flight instructor after the fact, he said, Chris, you should have never ever taken off in that plane, especially the second time, because after I landed the first time, well, that's, you gotta come go around and taxi and go do it 2 more times. But the sweat is just pouring off of me, and I'm shaking so bad. I'm trying to take a drink of my water, and water's going down the front of me. But it's one of those things, again, like at that moment right then. I mean, that's that go moment where you're sitting there going, okay, is this going to become another regret? You know, and granted, it's a big risk, but it's just all of that fear is just bubbled up saying no, no, no. And for some reason, I reach over and I push in the throttle, and you know, it's kind of like skydiving. I mean, once you're in the air, you're fully committed, and did it. You know,
I was just saying, like, maybe we will have to set up another meeting with you just to know how you come up your fears, how you cope up with a lot of chaos. So these two things are the major things for any entrepreneur. Whoever is going to follow us, whoever is going to be an entrepreneur, they really need to understand how to handle these two things. So, and probably it can be a big episode where we can discuss all these questions about fear.
Sure.
And
sure,
and getting out of chaos.
I've got tons and tons of stories out there, and they're not bullshit. They're all totally real. I mean, I've got pictures and everything else. I mean, the scariest thing was a few years back. I'm 57 now. I was in my early 50s then, but I went to a professional bull riding school, and I'd never ridden a bull. And that was probably the most scared I've ever been in my life. But again, it's that point when you're sitting there and you shake your head and you go and you do it, you know, and it's a real story.
For sure. So yeah. Do you feel like you doing all these things now and making that pivot in your life about 10 years ago has helped you in your business career as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, right now, every industry, especially if you look at what's going on with AI and everything, and in our business, like with streaming and everything else, if you're fearful and if you're lacking in courage and confidence, you know, and which are, you know, I've got, you know, 5 core values I like to live by. But if you're lacking courage and confidence, it's going to be tough. Not only is it going to be tough for you, but it's not going to be enjoyable, you know. And I look at this, you only get one shot at life. I mean, you've got to enjoy it. And in fact, sometimes it's the challenge and it's the adversity that, you know, really is the draw for me. And again, I'm nobody special. I'm just an old fat bald guy that likes to do what I like to do. So
you have something very special, and that is exposure, experience, and exposure, which obviously the new entrepreneurs, or maybe me and Daniel, don't have that much experience and exposure that you have. So obviously, yeah, that's good. So I just wanted to ask one thing. In your conversation, you said you are going every, like you're trying everything, like you are keeping up the technology as well. So I just wanted to know, like, how technology is making your business better day by day in current scenario.
Oh, yeah, it's from a business perspective. I mean, new technologies and stuff it's so exciting. I mean, there's so many different new things that are out there on the horizon for people who are, you know, in my line of work. With, you know, next gen television, for instance. And again, I think that AI, I started messing around with AI back in, I don't know, late October, November, whenever Joe Rogan started talking about it. I like to listen to his podcast and I'm like, what is this ChatGPT thing? You know, and I start messing around with it. And I started trying to intentionally put that technology into my business back and I think that's what we're called to do, is figure out how can we take advantage of this, you know, and again, you've got to intentionally disrupt yourself, because if you're not doing it, I can guarantee you there's somebody out there trying to figure out how to do it. Not to go into a big long story here, but back in 2016, I wanted to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. And I have a buddy of mine that's a Department of Public Safety trooper. He's a DPS guy that catches you with whenever you're driving too fast out there on the Texas highways. And he said, you know, Chris, I'd like to do some of that stuff you do. And he says, but it takes a lot of money. And I said, well, if you want it bad enough, you can do it. And at that time, I was in Waco, Texas, and running a TV station, which is, you know, takes a lot of time. I mean, it's not a 40-hour a week job. It's you work around the clock. If you wanted to, you probably should need to at some points. But anyway, it's a big job. And so I started thinking, how could I take on some sort of part-time job in order to be able to earn this money outside of, you know, my other job and keep it all held down. Well, I applied for a job at Domino's Pizza, and I worked as a delivery driver for a few months. And it was an amazing experience. It was the Domino's Pizza that was on the Baylor campus. And those rich kids that go to Baylor, they tip really well. And I'm a sales guy, so it's just selling, you know, you get extra tips. I'm a fresh hot pizza coming in, fresh and hot, you know, here quick. And but it was interesting. After a couple of days of working there, delivering pizzas, I figured out very quickly, I'm like, these people are not in the pizza business, they're in the technology business. And I'm sitting there looking at, you know, so they have that the ingredients that they can put on a pizza there. And if you were to do the combinations and permutations, you know, of how many different pizzas you could make, I mean, it's millions. And the last thing that I would do before I checked, left the store with a pizza delivery, is I would make sure that all the ingredients were correct. I never got a wrong pizza. It's like, how can you make that many pizzas? Well, because they had great systems, they had great processes, and they injected technology into what they did. I mean, instead of the old days when you'd pick up the phone or pick up the cell phone and you would call and order the pizza, you were able to go into the app. And so they disrupted themselves. I mean, it was clear they disrupted themselves, and they said, we don't want to have to do that. We want people to look at a menu and select what they want. So that order comes in and goes into the system and prints out the ticket. The person grabs it. It's all set up the way that pizza is assembled. The app, you know, the second that person who makes the pizza passes it off and puts it in the oven, they pass that ticket. That then sends out that alert over your app saying, hey, your pizza's in the oven. The second it comes out, you know, they hit it and it sends the next alert saying your pizza's out of the oven, it's on the way. And whenever I leave the store with it, I mean, there's the GPS. I mean, all of the, it's all technology. They just happen to deliver pizzas in the process of doing it. And it was so cool seeing that. I felt like I should have been paying them to work there instead of me paying, you know, them paying me. And as a side note, I took the money that I made there and I gave it to the porters on Kilimanjaro. And after we, you know, as the tip whenever we came down.
Great. So how do you find the right technology for a business or maybe for sales. So what's the metrics that you find, okay, this is a suitable technology for me right now?
Well, whenever it comes to sales, you know, I'm kind of an, I wouldn't call myself old school or new school. I'm more about, I always believe that, you know, you got to find systems. It's always about systems and finding a system that works, you know, perhaps for your organization, but then can be customized to work for the individual. You know, so often whenever you're in sales, they talk about CRM or customer relationship management programs like Zoho, or I think Salesforce is the big one, you know. And again, personally, what I think is that managers weaponize that software system, and therefore then the salesperson looks at it as something that is, you know, not their friend who's there to help them plan and organize their day, but it's their adversary. It's that person looking over the shoulder. And you know, and so I always believe you got to look at things and say, you know, how can I use whatever technology is to help this person, you know, advance the conversation, you know, advance the sale. And then ultimately, you know, after the sale is made, service that client and give the highest level of customer service that you can possibly give. I mean, I started using a CRM system in like 1998. I bought my own laptop computer, which was way too much money. I didn't have two nickels to rub together at the time. But I bought it, and I bought this little program called ACT 2.0, and it like revolutionized the way I was able as a salesperson. I was able to fit, you know, not only was I able to grow the, you know, in sales, you know, the pipeline, it's about how much we can handle in our pipeline. And then it's about, not only is it the size of the pipeline, but it's the velocity that we can move, you know, move people, prospects through that pipeline. And I mean, literally overnight, it was like an aha moment for me, because, you know, it was like I was a forestry logger, and I had set down my axe that I was using to do my job, and I picked up a chainsaw, because again, I could fit, my pipeline grew so big, and I was able to have a system in which to zip people down and through my pipeline and produce more sales on the other end. And then ultimately, past that, would nothing would fall through the cracks, because I was able to take care of my customers.
For sure. So if somebody wanted to reach out to you and see all the cool stuff that you're doing, what's the best way for somebody to find you and reach you?
Probably best way is just, I've got a little blog website out here at chrispruitt.com, but it's kind of funny. It also is a ghost domain for bmfadventureclub.com. And it was kind of, I don't know, it was back in like 2015. And of course, we've all seen that movie, Quentin Tarantino, Pulp Fiction, or whatever, you know, and it's that scene at the end where, you know, he's getting his wallet back after, you know, Bunny and the other guy takes it, you know, and he says, how do I know it's your wallet? And he says, it's the one that says, you know, bad motherfucker on it, you know, and sometimes that's what you got to do, man. I mean, you gotta, you know, again, not to use all the, you know, cuss words and everything here. I don't want to mess up y'all's podcast, but sometimes, man, you got to dig deep, and you got to go to a place that you don't normally go, and you got to be a bad motherfucker. And again, I'm just an old fat bald guy. I am not a BMF by any stretches of the imagination, but sometimes you got to dig, you know. And I came up with this little BMF adventure club thing. I said, you know, someday 20 years from now, because I have nothing to sell, my girlfriend, she's a librarian. She wants me to write a book and stuff. And I'm like, I don't know about that. But I came up with this little BMF Adventure Club domain name, and I've used it ever since. But sometimes you do gotta dig, you know. It's this past weekend, I did a marathon. I was signed up for, I needed to run one more marathon. I set a goal this year to run 12 marathons this year, and I had ran 11 marathons, one half marathon, and then one 25K out in Phoenix on my birthday a few weeks ago. And I was like, okay, that's 12 marathons, I'm done and everything. But you know, it wasn't 12 marathons. It was 11 marathons, it was one half marathon, and it was a 25K. And I said, I got to make this right. So I signed up for this habanero race out in Sealy, Texas. And I got to tell you, man, it was hot. It was real hot. And I lost a toenail here a few weeks ago in a off-road. Oh, I stopped doing road marathons too. I like doing the trail off-road because they kick your ass. And so I lost a toenail a few weeks ago doing an off-road marathon. In fact, I've got a really cool video out there of me using a box cutter cutting my toenail off, but whenever it was partially detached. But and then I had a kidney stone 2 weeks ago that I thought I was about to die. I don't know if y'all have ever had a kidney stone, but it is a horrible situation. But anyway, but I went ahead and did the run last week, and you know, there were some moments there. I mean, it was hot here in Texas, and there were some moments when I had to go into my inner BMF and say, okay, let's get this damn thing done so we can be finished.
Awesome. Well, Chris, I want to say thank you so much for doing this podcast. We definitely should chat again because, to your point, you have lots of cool stories, and you know, keep posting your content.
Yeah.
It's really exciting, and yeah, keep doing cool stuff and BMF stuff, I should say.
Oh, there you go. I'm not, whenever people ask me what that means, I say blowing. I started sailing here last about a year ago, and I bought a sailboat. Now I'm trying to learn how to sail out in the ocean, and I tell people BMF stands for blowing money fast, because that seems like that's what I do a lot these days.
Sounds great. Thanks again. Thank you so much.
All right, you guys take care.
Thanks.
Thanks,
Bye
too.
bye.
Thanks for coming. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.